Today is Tuesday, July 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. We're in Washington. Coming your way, an international court rules against China in the confrontation over its presence in the South China Sea. Also ahead, a major step has been taken in the race for the next U.S. president.
Secretary Clinton has won the Democratic nominating process.
VOA national correspondent Jim Malone will be here to talk about it. And what was a violent day in South Sudan was followed today by an uneasy calm. We probe that story with VOA's Jeffrey Young. It's all on today's International Edition. China has swiftly rejected an international tribunal's ruling that its expansive claim to the South China Sea had no legal basis, saying the ruling was null and void and that Beijing would not accept it. Well, the ruling by the five-member panel at The Hague in the Netherlands handed a massive victory to the Philippines, which had filed the case back in 2013, challenging the so-called nine-dash line that China uses to claim virtually the entire South China Sea. Manila opposed it because they said it infringes upon its own 200-mile exclusive economic zone. We welcome to International Edition the person who made that claim to the court, Attorney Paul Reichler, who headed Manila's legal team, I guess still does. And Paul, thanks for being with us. Now, this verdict is being described as even more than the Philippines had hoped for. Do you concur with that?
I think it is exactly what the Philippines had hoped for. The Philippines believed in the validity of each one of the claims that it made and presented before the tribunal. And the Philippines has always been optimistic about the outcome, although one can never be certain what any court or tribunal will decide until you see the final decision. And I think this vindicates the Philippines' claims and its decision to go forward with the arbitration.
Well, the question here is going forward now with the arbitration. The Chinese President Xi Jinping, as you probably expected, repeated Beijing's stance that the South China Sea has been Chinese territory since ancient times and that China's territorial sovereignty and interest in the region wouldn't be influenced under any circumstances by the ruling. Just about saying we don't care what it says. We are just going to go on as if no ruling had been made. How do you react to that?
Well, with all due respect to the Chinese leaders, who are very capable and very wise people, I think we haven't heard the final word on this subject. What China has announced today and what they have been saying over the last several months is not the end of the story. We now have a situation where the legal rights, not only of the Philippines, but also of all of the other South China Sea coastal states have been defined and have been articulated and have been confirmed. It's not just the Philippines that wins from this decision. It's also Malaysia, Indonesia, Vietnam, and other states with coasts along the South China Sea, which have legitimate claims under the Law of the Sea Convention to 200-mile exclusive economic zones, just like the Philippines. If the nine-dash line is unlawful and invalid, as applied to the Philippines, as the tribunal decided, then it is equally unlawful and invalid as applied to Malaysia, Indonesia, Vietnam, and other states. And I think we can expect to see those states emboldened by this decision. They have always protested the nine-dash line. They have known of its illegality, but now their rights, as well as those of the Philippines, have been confirmed, have been strengthened, and have been made public in this arbitral award. So I think China will be confronting a situation not just where it's facing the Philippines across the South China Sea, but it'll be facing all of its neighbors who have a common position that the nine-dash line is unlawful and that their rights, as recognized by the tribunal under the Law of the Sea Convention, out to 200 miles, must be respected. In the end, I think it's inevitable that there will be a negotiated diplomatic solution. It may take a year, it may take 2 years, it may take more. And by definition, if there is a negotiated solution, it means it has to be something acceptable to all sides. And the other states, that is, the states other than China that border the South China Sea, will not simply accept the abandonment of their rights, will not simply acquiesce in an illegal nine-dash line claim that gives to China 90% of the South China Sea and all of its resources. I think China understands that, and I think China will eventually find a way to reach an accommodation with its neighbors through skilled diplomacy. Above all, the solutions to these conflicts must be peaceful.
Speaking of peaceful solutions, this is Steve Miller here in the studio. This case was brought about under the Aquino administration, and now President Duterte has said he is looking forward to possibly having discussions with President Xi Jinping and Beijing over the disputed territory. Now, with this award going to the Philippines, have you had any contact with the Duterte administration about how they may interpret the results and how they may move forward with their plans?
Well, I'm going to have to invoke attorney-client privilege for any communications I have had with my client, particularly about such a sensitive matter. But if my view is correct, that there will eventually be a diplomatic solution that takes account of and recognizes the rights of all of the states along the South China Sea, including China itself, then it would not be unwise for the leaders of all of these countries to be thinking about how to engage diplomatically with China and with each other. Now, what the Philippines might decide in that regard and what the other states might decide in that regard will be known in the reasonably near future. This award is only a few hours old, and all of these governments need time to digest it, to consult with their senior advisors, to consult among themselves, and to plan a strategy for going forward. But there is certainly no reason to object to any state that commits itself to a negotiated solution. How and when and in what form negotiations are to be commenced will be for the states themselves to decide.
Attorney Paul Reichler, he headed Manila's legal team in the court case that was decided today, at least in court. And just one question pops into my mind, Paul, and that is, do you expect any further, or could there be any further legal action in any legal forum about this?
Well, again, I think that it's too soon to tell. We're only a few hours from the issuance of the award, and I think all of the states in the region whose rights are affected, either confirmed or otherwise by this ruling, will be thinking about what their best options are. And those options could conceivably include legal action by one or more other states. But again, I think any legal action, including this one, is a prelude to an ultimate political settlement that takes into account and is based on the rules of law as articulated by the arbitral tribunal in the case brought by the Philippines.
Paul, I thank you so much for being with us. Valuable information, and I know your time is very limited today, and I thank you for extending some to us.
No, thank you very much.
Paul Reichler, he headed Manila's legal team in this arbitration session today. Steve, we haven't heard the end of this, have we?
No, now, as Paul so aptly said, now it's time to wait and see what actually Beijing decides to do.
Yeah, that it is. And Steve, I thank you for being with us. That is Steve Miller, BOA Steve Miller. And make sure you follow his podcast, his Asia Weekly podcast. And when is it on? Well, it's on all the time, obviously. Yeah.
You can find it every weekend in iTunes and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is International Edition. Andrew Palshewski is here, our International Edition social media guru. Well, I think that probably the decision in The Hague about China is trending somehow, right?
Absolutely. It's trending worldwide, not just in the region. And it really depends on what side you're on. That's what you're tweeting about or posting about. If you're on the side of the Philippines, a lot of the Southeast Asian countries, this is a great ruling because this limits what China can do and says that they can't overtake these lands in the South China Sea. If you're a supporter of China on social media, you're saying this isn't the end of this. We're going to keep fighting on. So there's a lot of back and forth on that. A lot of questions people have, too, about what this might mean, how this might play out. I've seen more than one graphic representation of the different areas in the South China Sea that are at stake. So a lot of information being shared and a lot of questions being asked and answered.
Yeah, I probably more questions than there are answers after this, especially in light of what we just talked about in China's refusal to accept the decision of the court in The Hague. What else is trending?
Well, we also have Dallas that's trending. Of course, the shooting over the weekend of the police officers there during that Black Lives Matter protest. President Obama and former President Bush are going to be there today for a memorial service. So we're seeing photos just coming out now. We're going to see coverage of that on social media throughout the course of the day, videos and photos, some quotes from some of the remarks that are being made. It's going to be shared across social media and covered heavily there.
Yeah, it's a very emotional story here in the United States. I would imagine worldwide as well. And then we had breaking news earlier today about this train crash in Italy.
Yeah, there's the death toll sadly keeps rising in that train crash. And one thing that I was struck by is the immediacy of the photos that we saw. We saw people taking pictures and posting them to social media, standing right alongside the wreckage of this train crash, people that may have been on those trains, and they're sharing those to social media. And it's giving us a glimpse that we wouldn't have otherwise of what the aftermath looked like and what it means to be in the midst of that crash. So social media is providing that for us, and we're seeing more. And as these news updates come out about this crash, we're seeing those updates spread across social media.
And what else is trending?
Well, we'll end on a lighter note. It is Prime Day worldwide, another big, exciting day. Of course, this is Amazon's day, where they claim it's bigger than Black Friday, Black Friday being the big shopping day after Thanksgiving here in the U.S. They said it's bigger than that, more deals. Now, they have a lot to live up to, because last year the big hashtag was hashtag Prime Day Fails. There were a lot of things they were offering on sale that people weren't thrilled about the price, or items that were kind of useless that were on sale, and then they would run out of items. So this year they have that to live up to. I went on this morning, I looked, it looks like some pretty good deals. In fact, I already bought myself a Kindle, so I'll be doing some reading this weekend when that arrives.
Yeah, I looked as well, but I kind of agree with what happened last year. Whatever I'm looking for, maybe too specific or whatever, just not there.
Perhaps.
But I'll keep on checking, and we should, listen, if you're hearing this, don't tell our bosses and our supervisors that that's what we've been doing earlier. But of course, we did it.
All research.
It's all journalism.
Absolutely.
All journalism.
Absolutely.
That's why I like working with Andrew Palshevsky, our social media guru. Andrew, thank you. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thank you.
This is VOA. Among the top stories in the world, an international court is dismissing China's territorial claims in the South China Sea, saying it has no historic title to the vast maritime region. In the U.S., the number of Democratic candidates for president is down to one. And at least 20 people were killed, dozens injured, when two passenger trains collided head-on in the southern Italian region of Puglia. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com, on our website, and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
Here's science in a minute.
A New Zealand-based study suggests that children who are exposed to microbial organisms at an early age through thumb sucking or nail biting are less likely to develop allergies. The study goes on to say that it finds children that engage in both of these habits are less likely to develop allergies to common triggers such as house dust mites, grass, cats, dogs, horses, or airborne fungi. Researchers made their findings from data gathered by the Dunedin Multidisciplinary Study. The long-term study followed into adulthood about 1,000 participants who were born in Dunedin, New Zealand in 1972 and 1973. The researchers say that they are not suggesting that children be encouraged to engage in thumb-sucking or nail-biting, since it's still uncertain if there are any real health benefits from acquiring these habits. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We continue on International Edition. An uneasy calm settled over South Sudan's capital today after that country's leader and his top rival both demanded a ceasefire. Renewed fighting between opposing army forces raised fears of a return to civil war in the East African country, which marked its fifth anniversary of independence over the weekend while panicked residents hid inside their homes. VOA's Jeffrey Young joins us in the studio with the latest on this. Jeffrey?
Ira, for the moment, indeed, there is a ceasefire. But just imagine this. People sitting across the street looking at each other with their hands on their gun triggers and waiting for the other side to blink. It's so tense you can cut it with a knife in Juba, South Sudan. Earlier today, I spoke with Alex DeWall, the executive director of the World Peace Foundation. He's also a professor at Tufts University. And I asked him, what would be the best way to try to impose some peace and order in South Sudan right now? And his answer was, it's time for the African Union to step up to the plate and to intervene robustly.
The African Union is already deeply engaged in South Sudan. The monitoring mechanism that was set up for the peace agreement in South Sudan is set up by the African Union, but most fundamentally, this week, the African Union is meeting for a summit meeting in Kigali, Rwanda, the first such meeting in that country since the genocide of 22 years ago. Now, when that genocide was committed and the United Nations peacekeepers failed to respond, failed to protect civilians, but also it led to some foundational principles for the African Union, notably the principle of non-indifference, the right of the Union to intervene in the case of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide, and the creation of a mechanism, the African Standby Force, for that type of operation. And at this meeting in Kigali later this week, this is surely the occasion on which the African Union should operationalize that fundamental principle and deploy its African Standby Force in support of the UN mission that is already there in South Sudan to protect civilians and to prevent a return to full-scale war in that country.
Talk about full-scale war. Did anybody expect this to work?
Well, when I talked to Alex DeWall and I asked him that question, he said he was amazed that peace actually held for about 2 months. This transitional government began in April when First Vice President Riek Machar came back to Juba. He had been out for a while. Congressman Ed Royce, who is the chairman of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, pointed out several months ago that if you have two armed camps in Juba, it's going to create an explosion. And he was absolutely true. As far as this transitional government is concerned, there's not a lot of optimism that it's going to be able to keep the peace until there is a new presidential election coming up in the year 2018. That's two long years from now, Ira.
Yep, that it is, and we got to basically keep the fingers crossed as far as it's so tenuous there now. It's almost off the chart, right?
Absolutely, and between the African Union and the United Nations as a peacekeeping force as well. And Alex DeWall and others have said it's going to take both of these forces working side by side in coordination. And maybe even that won't keep these people from going after each other. It's that tenuous.
Jeffrey Young, VOA's Jeffrey Young on the situation in South Sudan. Thank you, Jeffrey. This is VOA, and this is International Edition. Let's change course a little bit to U.S. domestic politics, where, as we said in the headlines just a few minutes ago, that the Democratic race is down to one person, that being Hillary Clinton. And VOA national correspondent Jim Malone is with us to explain what has happened, if you haven't figured it out yet.
Well, the long-awaited endorsement from Bernie Sanders of Hillary Clinton has occurred in New Hampshire. A bit ironic because it was in New Hampshire, perhaps, that Sanders had his greatest victory in the primary season. It was the second contest, and he really thumped Clinton in that. But they have now come together back in the Granite State. They are, you know, shown together, holding their hands high, waving to the crowd, even though some in the crowd apparently early on were chanting Bernie, and the Clinton people responded with chants of unity. It does look like it's headed for unity now, But Sanders may come quickly. The question is, how quickly will his followers, some of whom still have problems with Clinton?
What attempts did he make? And I heard some. I unfortunately didn't have time to hear all of it. But he seemed to be laying out his case for what he wants in the Democratic platform. Is that correct?
You know, I watched it. And what it came down to was this. Both candidates had to endure each other's stump speeches. How do you like that? I guess that's what gets you the endorsement in the end. You have to sacrifice something. Yes, I mean, I think the Clinton camp went a long way toward agreeing with Sanders on issues like minimum wage, college education, and health care. So to that extent, Clinton was willing to compromise. She knows how important those Sanders followers are, particularly younger voters. There's a new poll out from the Associated Press that shows Clinton's problems with younger voters. They're hoping that Sanders will have an impact on that in the fall campaign.
It's quite amazing that you look at Bernie Sanders and you say, this guy is a youth magnet. And he's, what, 70-something years old already? But it's what he had to say, obviously.
Well, he tapped into something in the Democratic side. Now, the Clinton people are absolutely desperate to bridge that into their campaign and get that same enthusiasm going. The problem is there doesn't seem to be that kind of enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton as a candidate, especially among the Sanders supporters. What's Plan B? Plan B is somebody named Donald Trump. They now see Donald Trump as the unifier for the Democratic Party. We saw Clinton campaigning with President Obama last week. We've now seen her with Joe Biden. We've seen her with, today, Bernie Sanders. You're going to see this party pull together, and they are going to make the unifying target Donald Trump. And that was evident in what both Sanders and Clinton had to say today.
It's going to be interesting to see how this manifests itself, how they go after Donald Trump, and also what Donald Trump is going to come back and try to hit them with.
Yeah, and sets up the stage for more unity at the Democratic Convention the last week in July.
VOA National Correspondent Jim Malone, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. I'm Ira Melman, our director, Patrice Martin. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On February 24, 1942, one of the darkest days of the Second World War, radio listeners in Axis-occupied Europe heard this announcement. Daily at this time we shall speak to you about America and the war. The news may be good or bad. We shall tell you the truth. For nearly 75 years, VOA has kept that promise. It was a promise reaffirmed on July 12, 1976, in the VOA Charter, given by the U.S. Congress and signed into law by President Gerald Ford. The Charter provides, first, that VOA will serve as a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news, and that news will be accurate, objective, and comprehensive. Second, that VOA will represent America, not any single segment of American society, and will present a balanced, comprehensive projection of significant American thoughts and institutions. Third, that VOA will present the policies of the United States clearly and effectively, as well as responsible discussions and opinion of these policies. The Charter's first principle protects the journalistic integrity of VOA News. No official is allowed to pressure a reporter to spin a story in a certain direction. The second ensures that the diversity of America, from sea to shining sea, from Muslim to Christian to Jew to non-believer, from universities to factories to think tanks to Hollywood, is represented. And the third guarantees the world knows where the United States government clearly stands on important issues of the day and why. On the Charter's 40th anniversary, Amanda Bennett, director of the Voice of America, spoke of its enduring relevance.
The VOA Charter has never been more important than it is today. The world really needs a reliable and authoritative source of news and information, which is what the VOA Charter intends us to be.
The Charter remains the Voice of America's lodestar, guiding its mission to present the truth and, as Director Bennett said, to reflect all sides of the American discussion.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.